Hello and welcome to Lore Watch, a roundtable freeform discussion about lore and our favorite media. I'm your host, Joe Perez, one of several lore-focused folks from Blizzard Watch, and I've got my marvelous co-host with me today, Matt Rossi. How are you doing today, Matt?
Actually, I'm the timely version of myself. Later on, you'll get to meet the Marvel version. They find out I was frozen in an iceberg, and the Submariner throws me at somebody, I think. I think he's throwing him at? I'm not sure, but, you know, that'll happen. That's later.
One day we're going to have another comic book episode and it's going to be wild and I can't wait. But in the meantime, friends, we are going to be not talking about comic books or being in frozen in ice. We are instead going to be answering your questions from our wonderful listeners. If you have questions for this or any of our podcasts, you can be sure to send those in to podcast@blizzardwatch.com, singular podcast. Just go ahead and specify the show that it's for. And if you have any special pronunciation of your name, if you don't want to send us an email, you can go ahead and send us those questions in our Discord channel. We have one set aside for the Q and podcast questions, and for our Patreon supporters as a special way of saying thank you for your continued support and allowing us to do this show, as well as many of the other things we do on the site. We have the Patreon Q and podcast questions channel, where we tend to look for first for our questions. And without further ado, our first question comes from Scotty Adi, a Beastmaster Hunter. Hello, Watchers. I have two questions for a Lore Watch. While doing the quests to bring other flights to the Dragonlands and set up the areas in the Ruby Life Shrine, it occurred to me that the resulting whelps would be ordered. However, upon looking at the body types for these dragons, they have the body type of a dragon rather than a drake. I'd love to know more about the history of these flights and know if they were ordered before they acquired their respective infusions, or if those infusions contributed to their ordeal, their ordered appearance. And then there's, we'll answer that one first, and then we'll go on to the second question here from Scotty Adi. So go ahead.
We know that the bloody heck, I cannot think of the word for them. The ones that got hit by the nether magic.
The nether wing from the Outlands.
Yeah, the nether wing were black dragon eggs.
Yes.
They were already ordered. Yeah. As far as the storm dragons are concerned, Odin seems to have been involved in their creation somehow. He certainly tells them that he made them. Now, we're pretty sure he's lying. They're dragons. They heard the dragon call. They're dragons. They're probably just dragons he messed with in a possibly similar fashion to what happened to the Nether Drakes, or possibly some other way. We don't know what exactly is their genesis. We don't know why there are storm drakes. We know that there are, if you go back to Cataclysm, there were stone drakes that looked like dragons and not drakes. You're talking about proto drakes when you say drakes. There were in fact dragons on the plane of Earth, and we know from the plane of air as well, that looked like dragons and not drakes. So it's possible that the drake body plan is a devolution of some sort. It might be somewhat similar to what happened with Trogs. We find Trogs in Deep Home, so there's a whole debate about what's up with that. But it's also possible that the Titans were creating dragons going back to the, you know, when they had created the elemental planes. They may have grabbed dragons and brought them there. It's possible that the elemental dragons, like the Stone Drakes, are in fact from Azeroth and may have been put into those planes either accidentally or on purpose. This is not something we have any information on. So we can say for sure that the Nether Drakes and the Twilight Drakes, by the way, in case they ever come back, we didn't see any Twilight Drakes this time around. But if the Twilight Drakes ever show up again, they're technically descended from either black or red dragon eggs. And they are therefore ordered. In terms of the Storm Drakes, it seems likely they were ordered, but we don't know.
The other thing to consider, too, and we talked about this in our... We did a whole series specifically on dragons. One of the things we talked about is that dragons, like a lot of life on Azeroth, seems to be extremely receptive to energy in general. When we talked about the Ruby Life Shrine at the beginning, the fact that they can be ordered is sort of a testament to the fact that they respond to the order magic that's placed sort of through those waters. We've also talked about the Netherwing in the past, where they're responding to basically exposure to the twisty nether. That is what makes them what they are. Twilight Drakes to the energies that essentially produce, that are wielded by the Twilight Covenant and the Twilight Cultists. They basically seem to transform or evolve based around it. There's a certain inference you can make with the Storm Dragons as well, based off of where they're located, which is, well, the Storm Peaks.
And, right? And you'll note, when you go talk to the matriarch of the Storm Dragons, that she's got a whole bunch of eggs underneath her in the mountain.
Yeah.
That are getting blasted by lightning pretty continuously.
Yeah, and that's a theme that we notice. Like, if you look, go back and fly through the Storm Peaks, if you get the opportunity, if you have a few moments, and just watch where the clutches of eggs are. They are essentially lightning rods. There are lightning rods basically in egg form. They draw in that storm energy, whether it's how they've evolved or just the natural inclination of the dragon eggs, which already seem to be sort of in that receptacle mode, I guess. They already have the multiple prongs. They already have basically arms outstretched to sort of channel the energy within them. Like, dragon eggs have a very distinct shape, and I think that's not a coincidence.
They look really unpleasant to lay, I'll tell you that.
And they probably look very unpleasant to guard and clutch on top of as well. But that could be a clue as to why we see the Netherwing and the Storm, well, I'm just going to call them the Stormwing at this point, but the Storm Dragons, the Stormwing, why they have the same body types is because, yes, they started as ordered things that maybe, like the rest of the dragons, maybe they were dragon eggs that were, like in Odin's case with the Storm Dragons, maybe they were dragon eggs that were taken from the Dragon Isles. It was a Titan facility, after all. It was something that the other Watchers likely knew about in some capacity. They had to at some point. They gave their blessing to the Dragonflights, so why wouldn't they know that they were there? Maybe some of those eggs got absconded with by Odin, and maybe he stuffed them in the mountains and was like, well, I'm going to make my own, and here they are. And this is what they are. And I'm air quoting make.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
But in terms of what the future brings for them when it comes to being in the Ruby Life Shrine, I don't think it's really going to make much of a difference anymore. And partially it's because of maybe the second question as well. But the fact is, they're already affected by ordered magic. They're already, previous to this, they've already been sort of under the influence of order. So there's not really much more variance for them to go. Because they're not just, I mean, if you look at it, all the dragonflights lay their eggs there. You still have black dragons and green dragons and bronze dragons. They still evolve into their own clutches and move there. But the eggs have already been laid and then moved to the shrine. They've already been in various, one of the things, there's a quest with Murazond and Norzdomu, and I cannot remember the infinite dragon that you go and talk with. And slight spoilers here, and I apologize. Come back in like 5 minutes. But you find out that the reason that they chose to become an infinite dragon is because their clutchmate died. And their clutchmate died at the hands of a black dragon in Tanaris, essentially. It was in one of the hidden temples of the Titan facilities. And what you didn't realize until you get towards the end of the quest is that the reason that they gave their life is that there were eggs already laid there. The eggs were there. They were present. So they basically had already started absorbing whatever time energy was there because, well, that was a nexus point. So they were already evolved. They were already in that thing, into that sort of like timey-wimey egg mode, I guess we'll call it. Then if they get transported back to the shrine or if they get moved to that shrine to finish hatching, that's just sustaining them so that you don't have to protect them. That's basically just saying, yes, we got this one area to put all of our eggs where we can watch over everything.
There's we one have basket. The egg to, we're going to put them all in it.
Kind of, right? But you have the tenders, the egg tenders that are there. They watch over those clutches and shepherd them to life. They essentially,
you know, another way to put, look at this.
They use that energy in place of the aspects doing it. Sorry, go ahead.
There's another thing to think about, which is in line with what you're saying. The black dragons just showed up with a bunch of eggs. They laid those eggs on, you know, in Outland.
Yeah.
You know, and they've been in Outland for what, 20 years?
Yeah.
Some of those eggs, I mean, we don't know how long it takes a dragon egg to hatch. Like, they seem like they can just hang around forever. But those eggs have been sitting there in Outland for 20 years at the minimum. And also, he had a bunch of black dragons with him.
Ones that had hatched, ones that were grown.
Yeah, but some of them were drakes.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a couple of whelps flying around. And they hadn't gotten to the Ruby Life Pools yet, because this was... not Rathian, the other one. Sabellion. This was Sabellion's flight, the ones that had come with him. They came with him with eggs, with drakes, and with babies.
Mm-hmm.
They had whelps. Those whelps had never been in the Ruby Life Pools. They were still baby black dragon whelps, you know what I'm saying? Which is, everything Joe's saying, there's your perfect example. Like, right there. The black dragon showed up with eggs, with hatchlings, and with juveniles. And they weren't drakes. Like, they weren't, like, you know, proto-drake shaped.
Yeah.
And they were black dragons.
And think about the other aspects of the Ruby Shrine, too. Like, when you go into just outside of just the egg hatching area, what's the inside of it? What's the inside of the shrine? It's basically a nursery where they kind of hang around and continue to grow as they get older and get stronger. So, like, I don't think it's going to have, like, going back to the root of the question, I think the Netherwing will continue to be the Netherwing. I think the Stormwing will continue to be the Stormwing, and I think that they're just going to start becoming integrated into the rest of Dragon society. Because the other thing, too, is don't forget, the Netherwing and the Stormwing both comment about how they felt the call, just like the rest of the dragons. There was no differentiating. There was no, we didn't hear it. There was no, oh, thank you. We didn't know that it was there. It's like, no, they knew that it was there. The Netherwing didn't know how they would be received. So they didn't want to show up because they basically, every time they've trusted anybody who wasn't the player character, it has resulted in nothing but horribleness for them, as they've basically been slaves for their entire time in Outland until we freed them and gave them the ability to essentially become their own masters and live life again. And the Stormwing didn't go because they felt obligated to Odin. Some of them actually did get up and leave, but the rest of them were like, no, we made a commitment. We made a promise. We have to go here. It doesn't matter how big the call is. We have to be here. So, like, they still felt it. They're just as much of a dragon as any of the others.
Yeah, and that's to the point where if you were playing Dragonflight before the most recent patches, there were storm dragons in the Dragon Isles. They were already there. Just not very many of them, but you could stumble upon them. You could get attacked by them because they were like, get away from my eggs. They were, in fact, they weren't even all that far away from... I can never remember. I want to say Thaldrassus, but that's not the name of it, is it?
Yeah, it is.
Okay. They were even that far away from Thaldrassus. They were just like a couple of, like, you know, you fly for 10 minutes, boom, they were over there. They were in the same zone.
Yeah, they were like a hop, skip, and a jump from the Valdrakken main city, right? Like,
yeah. And I think a lot of this is whatever the Titans did, whenever they did it, it's been done.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's, there is no, dragons don't undragon if you don't put them in the waters of the Ruby Life Pools, because we know full well that for 10,000 years, dragons have not been putting their eggs in the Ruby Life Pools. And they wanted to, but they couldn't because they couldn't find them.
And you raised a point a couple weeks ago where you basically said that I think that might apply here as well. What we're seeing may not be like you refer to the proto-drakes as a de-evolution. What the Titans did may have just been accelerated evolution. And again, yeah, maybe it's because of the exposure to the energies and giving them their specific aspectral powers that way. But we talk about the curse of flesh a lot. We talk about how evolution on the races of Azeroth occur, and dragons are no exception to that. Like this could have been their form that they were going to wind up in all along. And the Titans just said, okay, let's accelerate it a little bit. We don't know. Right.
Actually have very little idea about what was going on
there. Now, Tears back, and maybe someday he'll tell us, but he's sort of a depressed mess right now, and isn't really talking about his time, before. So we might get
an idea. What were you up to? What were you doing? Could you kind of throw, give us a little background here on what the heck is going on?
Yep. Now, you have a second question here, which is Varanoth seemingly acquires spectral powers at the conclusion of the new raid. Do you think that the leaders of these new flights will be invited to sit at the seat of Aspects? And if so, what will come from with power of their own, or will they just not have it? So I think what it means to be an Aspect has shifted. And I think that's sort of like the whole big point of what happens at the end of the raid encounter. So again, mild spoilers, but I think it's been long enough at this point. All of them gain spectral powers again, but they don't gain them from the Titans or the Titan facility. They're actually gifted them by Azeroth. And yes, Varanoth is in there. And I don't see enough people talking about this. I noticed this when we first saw the cinematic, and I've gone back and watched it a few times. I don't think it's an accident that she is sort of encapsulated in that she is given that power from Azeroth in defense of the heart. I think that's intentional, and I think she is essentially becoming the aspect of the disparate wings. I think she is the one that sort of represents them at this point, because when you're doing the quest, she's the one that goes and says, you need to come and be a dragon. You need to make your own choices. You are welcome here. Like, meeting with the Netherwing, it wasn't just Rathion. It was Rathion and Varanoth. Like, Varanoth was sitting there, and I believe Alex Straza was there as well. But Varanoth was right there. And Varanoth was the one that was speaking up more than the other two. Like, you are welcome here. You will be safe here. We will find a place for you to lay your eggs.
And more so even for the Storm Dragons. Varanoth shuts Odin up. And we can talk a lot about what that reveals about her power level.
Go for it.
I mean, we did it already. We did that last week, just like, what's the scouter say? She's over 9,000. We covered this. But point being, when Varanoth is the one who tells them, you are dragons, he does not have the right to tell you what to do. You tell you what to do. And if you want, she even says, there is a place for you on the Dragon Isles. And if you want it, it's there for you.
Yeah, not you have to take this.
Not saying, come on, we're going. She says, it's there. If you want to come, you can come. And she turns into her drake form and flies away. And they, I don't know if they all do, but it certainly looks like they all do.
It looks like they all do. At least I think that's the intention, or the thought process is that anyone that aren't subjugated, which that would be a whole other complicated mess.
There are probably a few other stone dragons who weren't actually there.
Yeah.
Like, they're off somewhere else doing something else, and then they come back and like, where's everybody go? How come nobody's looking at me directly? How come no one wants to just go talk to Odin? Okay. And we don't know what happened to that poor bugger.
But I also think it lends an interesting insight that what could have been the real, what was offered to the incarnates. Now I have not finished the book. I apologize for those of you that are waiting for us to review the book. Life has definitely gotten in the way for, I think, both Matt and I. And it may be covered in there, but it's sort of this mentality of, I don't know that there would have necessarily only been five aspects. This might have been something that had been previously offered to others. And of the incarnates, Varanoth is the most pragmatic. And she is probably the one, ironically, even though she is from the aspect of ice at that point, with the most heart. She doesn't like the Titans because the Titans wrest control away from the dragons. That's the perception, right? That's why she's rallying against the Titans. The others seem to only want to be in it for the power, or at least most of them. Razagath is sort of like the zealot of the group, like the true believer, that they must be Scourge. And then you have, Aridicron, who is the scheming mastermind. And you
have, my God, Joe.
Yes, go for it.
I just thought of something that would explain why Razageth is so angry with the Titans.
Because that was supposed to be her clutch that Odin has.
Odin stole those eggs from her.
She is the only other storm dragon. She is not, again, she is specifically a storm incarnate, not one of the other elements. Yep.
Yeah. It just hit me. I'm like, wait a minute. That would explain why she was so willing. She was willing to die to get the others out.
Yep.
She was willing to die because,
and she even,
go ahead.
She even says in the interactions, go back and watch what she, at the beginning of the leveling experience, when she's fighting Alexstrasza, you took our children. You took my children. You didn't give us a choice. Like, she is absolutely adamant about it. Alexstrasza doesn't know what she's referring to. That's why she doesn't know, because Alexstrasza wasn't part of that. Alexstrasza doesn't know that the storm clutch eggs were taken by Odin. But yeah, Razageth knows.
Yeah, that's something. I've always been a little thing. I've always had it in the back of my head thinking there might be a connection, because as you pointed out, storm. Mm-hmm. But yeah. Ooh, that's neat. If that comes out, that would be really cool if they did something with that. And it would explain why, while Virenoth is there when the Nether Dragons are given the invitation, it's Virenoth who steps up and makes the offer directly to the Storm Dragons.
Mm-hmm.
And she's really mad at Odin, like way more so than you might expect. I mean, I knowing Odin, yeah, you'd want to hit that guy. I wanted to hit that guy.
I still want to hit him.
Yeah.
But I've been thinking about that a lot, right? And then, again, you like the way that their aspects work out is Virenoth is pretty much the only one of the incarnate group that was in it of maybe sound mind and body. I don't really know how else to phrase it. Virenoth had been driven, or Razageth had been driven to sort of like this zealous state, and there was no negotiating. There was no talking with her. Do you see that when Alexstrasza tries it? Aridicron has his own scheme and is already sort of laying, like you find out, is already in league with the Void. And we don't know if that means the Void Lords or the Old Gods. We can make some inferences, but it's still, maybe he's the one that went back and made the original deal with N'Zoth. Maybe he's the reason why Neltharion got corrupted in the first place, because he made the deal with N'Zoth for that to happen. We don't know yet. We'll find that out later. But then you have Phyrak. Phyrak is just about power. Like everything he does is just about power. Doesn't care about anything else. Doesn't care about the other clutches. Doesn't care about Dragonkind. Like, there's a whole thing where you're rescuing Virenoth's clutch, like her wing. The talons of Virenoth. You're going and getting them, and you're finding out that, yes, some of her followers have really fallen under the sway of Phyrak, but the rest of her family has been basically held at knife point by Phyrak. And in fact, they were afraid that they were going to die, and that's really the only reason they kept going along with it after Virenoth was out. And because he doesn't care, and you see him kill literally anybody who's helping him because he doesn't care. Whereas Virenoth actually has it, like, she doesn't want Azeroth to burn. She just wants the Titans' influence gone. And so at the end, when Azeroth sees that Virenoth stood with the others to protect the heart, to protect the burgeoning tree, which we've talked about last episode and why the trees are important, please go back and listen to it. Azeroth, at this point, I'm fairly confident, knows that they're important, says, yes, okay, you were willing to put your life on the line against somebody you called your brother at one point to protect this and to protect everybody else and to protect me. Here's your power. Go and be the voice of these other wings that don't have it. take back something. This is the offer to you. Because that's the other thing that Viranoth says, right? That's what they all say. It wasn't that it was forced upon them. It was like somebody was offering it to them. A different power, not the Titan's power. And I thought that was really important. And I'm going to shut up and let Matt talk for a little bit.
I mean, you know, it might turn out that it is a Titan's power.
Sure.
But there's a big difference between the power, you know, as an offering versus it being imposed. And for that matter, the Aspects the first time didn't get the power forced on them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, Tyr offered it to them. He said, you know, I can, you can be the ones to protect Azeroth. We can, you know, you can gain this power and use it to defend the world. So we've always, you know, there's always been that, there's that group of Titan Forged who seem to be more amenable to the mortal races of Azeroth. And then there's the others that seem to be like, you know, less so. And Odin is chief amongst those guys. And, you know, and there's also the fact that, you know, in some cases, their own followers turned on them. Like Master Ra, Ra'den, one of his own, you know, Mogu turned on him and tore his heart out,
mm-hmm.
you know? And it wouldn't have happened had he been, you know, if Ra'den had been in possession of his faculties, if he hadn't recently been, you know, possessed by the essence of Amon-Thul, if he hadn't been distracted and not paying attention, he would have been fine. I mean, especially since it's Ra'den, the guy that made the elemental planes in the first place. So yeah, there's a lot we don't know yet, but I do think that it's fair to say that once dragons are become dragons as we understand them, so once they've taken that form, that's who they are. That's not something that just is going to come back. To the point where I wonder what, remember that little red dragon egg from the opening part where you find it and they've been sticking it in elemental fire and they fire infused it?
Yep.
You bring that egg back. You bring that egg back to the life pools. You give that egg to Alexstrasza. She does not seem to think that the egg is not going to be a dragon. You know, she seems to think, oh, what have they done to you? But she doesn't think like, oh, it's not going to be a dragon anymore. It's going to be a proto-drake. That never comes out of her.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's interesting. That's all. I don't have anything else to say on this subject. So.
Well, hopefully that answers your question. Thank you very much for that one, Scadiati. We're going to move on to our next one, which comes from our friend Vex. In the most recent couple of episodes of the podcast, you've been discussing Alunahir and how it could have possibly been growing in Un'Goro Crater, and when removed by Amon-Thul, created the crater. However, as I'm looking at the maps, I think it might have been in Sholazar Basin. In the direct center of the map is another crater, River's Heart, where the main trunk of the tree may have been, with many rivers feeding water down into the center, sneaking down almost like the roots that were once burrowed there, created trenches that the water is backfilling in from the surrounding ocean. Around said crater is the zone, are five pillars, Glimmering, Sun-Touched, Mosslight, Skyreach, and Lifeblood, which are all large crystals floating over them that seem to be Titan in nature. Another thing that struck me is Freya has an avatar in the zone holding off the undead from streaming down from Ice Crown in the zone. It seems like she would have most likely want to concern herself with the other keepers in Ulduar containing Yogg-Saron rather than expending power to have an avatar so far away. However, if the trees were from Alun, who possibly comes from the realm of life, then undead creatures would be anathema to something of that realm. So preserving Alun's gift from the undead would be in Freya's interest, since the spirit of Aenar likely giving her visions slash memories of the tree as it was and as it was, and the still active roots. Do you think that it is more likely spot than Alunahir, or have I missed some old Wrath of the Lich King lore explaining how this all came to be? I'm gonna let Matt go because there's a bunch here. Yeah, go for it.
There's a portal that directly links Sholazar and Un'Goro.
Yes, it's at the north of the map in Un'Goro, by the way.
Yeah, and that portal leads to a Titan creation called the Endymion, which is essentially a murder anything that messes with this machine. Like, you go and you take control of it, and you walk through in that thing, and you take the undead out. It's like the Titans literally left behind, in case of emergency, break glass, unleash the Endymion. So that's something to think about first up. Secondly, what makes you think that the world's first world tree didn't have roots in both places?
Mm-hmm.
It had roots throughout the world. It was literally a world tree.
Yeah, that's one of the things that's talked about in the journal when we talked about the Luna year in that episode, is that it created a whole system of far-reaching roots. Please continue, sorry.
It's quite possible that if you were in Un'Goro and you looked up, you would see this enormous tree. And if you were in Sholazar and you looked up, you would see this enormous tree, because there are trees in the world right now that have trunks that split into root systems, like a mangrove tree. You can look over there. Now imagine one so big that it could actually have part of itself in Sholazar and part of it in Un'Goro. That's entirely possible. It certainly seems that the primordial tree is in Un'Goro in terms of the Emerald Dream. But in the Emerald Dream, Un'Goro and Sholazar might be the same place. And I know you're going to say, but they're on different parts of the map. Yes, after an enormous catastrophe that ripped the world apart. Now, keep in mind, the Well of Eternity was large before. But look at the maps that we have. Assuming those maps are true, it was not anywhere near to the size of the maelstrom. It was not close to that big. It was big enough for a couple of cities to be on it. It was like, imagine if you took a good-sized lake, not even like the Great Lakes or anything like that, just a good-sized lake, and you put it, it's a big round lake, and on one side you have this, you have Suramar, and on the other side you've got Alundris, which eventually becomes Zin Ashara. Those two cities are opposed on the opposite sides of it. Sholazar could be on the side with Alundris, and that kind of makes a certain amount of sense, because if you look at the position of the Broken Isles, they're on the other side of Northrend from Sholazar. It's like Sholazar is kind of to the, like, up and to the, I want to say, west of Northrend.
Mm-hmm.
And the Broken Isles are to the east of Northrend and south. The Path of the Titans that descends down through Wormrest Temple, starts in Olduar, descends down through Wormrest Temple, was going into the water just south of the Dragonblight, which is closer to the other side and is heading towards that, kind of heading in that direction. So it's quite possible there's literally a Titan road from Wormblight straight to the Temple of Ilune, which would have at that time been it was a Titan construct, and we know this. We've been in the basement, we've seen the Titan stuff. And then it would have gone from there to the Titan fortress that's on the island that, you know, the Zandalar eventually settled, the Zandalar Island, back when it wasn't an island. So looking at all this stuff, Un'Goro, at first you're like, yeah, Un'Goro is all the way down here, but everything would have been a lot closer together. And there were Titan facilities linking all this stuff. All that stuff was built after this tree was planted.
Mm-hmm.
Alunahir predates the victory of the Titans. The Titans did not succeed in defeating the Black Empire until well after it. And in fact, Joe pointed out last week, it might in fact be the existence of the root system of Alunahir that made it possible to beat them.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to PrettyLitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Now, with all that said, it's quite possible that Alunahir didn't just have roots in both Sholazar and Un'Goro. It might also have had roots in other places like Dream Shadow.
Mm-hmm.
And the place in the dark, I want to say Darkshire, the gold, what is it called? Golden Bough? Is that what it's called?
I can't remember, but we were talking about the area in Darkshire that has the portal to it. We never really understood why those portals existed in those large trees. And Matt mm-hmm. speculated a couple weeks ago, and might have been even last week, that those may have been part of the original Aluna here. Those may have been offshoots of the tree. One of the things that Matt talked about, and we've talked about in the past as well, is that in our world, in real life, trees are now starting to be understood as becoming a system. They're not necessarily individuals. They can communicate with each other. They're basically a gigantic organism through a combination of roots themselves, essentially propagating themselves, and the fungus that links everything together. It creates this entire living network that is essentially a gigantic entity. And
let me put it to you this way, too, to go along with what Joe's saying. Have you ever eaten an apple?
Well, I have.
Yeah. I was kind of asking it rhetorically, and I'm kind of glad you jumped in there. But no, I am actually glad because I realized I don't have anyone to respond to this. So luckily, you said something. But when you eat an apple from an apple tree, it's a complete gamble what kind of apples a tree is going to have. Like apple trees, if you take the seeds from the apples and plant them, they don't grow the same kind of apple tree with the same kind of apples. That's not how apple trees work. So you're wondering, how do we have apple orchards then? We don't plant those trees. We take graft cuttings mm-hmm. from those trees, and we put them on other trees. We grow clones. The tree, like if you have like a golden delicious apple, you are eating a fruit from a clone
yep.
that was literally grafted out of another apple tree. That's because an apple tree, if you take the seeds of the golden delicious apples and they're still good, I mean, which is they probably are. That's what fruit is for. Fruit is designed to be eaten and the seeds pass through the digestive system and get to use all your poop as fertilizer. That's the whole deal with seeds. If you plant them, you are not going to get a golden delicious tree. You might. It's possible for you to do so, but it's also possible for it to be some kind of apple you've never seen before in your life because it's not. Every apple tree has, you know, variant DNA in its seeds, much like, you know, humans. Like when humans have offspring, our offspring don't just look like us. They're not just a clone of one of their parents because they have a mixture of their parents' DNA. Whatever tree pollinated that apple tree could have been a completely different tree, and you have no idea.
Well,
there's no way for you to know this. What I'm getting at is, go ahead, Joe.
I was going to say, the other thing to consider, too, is look up Pandopopulus. Mm-hmm. Pandopopulus is the one tree aspen forest in Utah that's made up of 47,000 trunks, millions of leaves, and a single root system.
Your root system is literally conjoined
because they are all the same tree. It is one tree that has replicated itself at this point, possibly more than 47,000. But like it has replicated itself and expanded itself. The reason I'm bringing that up is because Aluna here may have been doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know. And that may have been what set Amanthul off in the first place is, this is uncontrolled chaos. Look at it spreading wherever it wants to go. But to your point, we do know that we can talk about the other world trees, but there are other major trees throughout the world that may have been connected to it. Those portal trees, the ones that have a direct link to the Emerald Dream. Well, maybe they have a direct link to the Emerald Dream because they're offshoots of Aluna here, which is was originally a planting from the original mother tree. Right,
which is this Gahir, you know, the mother tree Gahir is basically,
which exists in the Emerald Dream.
It doesn't. It's kind of its own reality.
Yeah, it's its own pocket.
It's a tree that is its own universe. In fact, one of the things I've been thinking about is what we're calling the Emerald Dream on Azeroth might be the network of roots created by Aluna here.
Which is why it is able to be such a large, varied process, very similar to how we talked about the Shadowlands being.
Yeah. And for that matter, like there's that world tree in Northrend, mm-hmm. the one that was planted by Fandral Staghelm. It was originally like the crown of the heavens, and then it was Broken Crown. So it was originally, I think, Vordrasil, and then it was, I forget, I can't remember its name when it was broken. That's the problem I'm having. Well, whatever. Joe will look it up at some point, or I'll look it up and we'll know.
You're talking about Andrasil.
Point being, yes, thank you.
Yep. I was muted and trying to talk into a muted microphone. Like, why isn't Matt listening to me? So a little behind the scenes for you there, folks.
Why isn't Matt listening to me? Because he just isn't shutting up. No. But my point is, just much like you have those apple trees where every time you get the same fruit, it's because effectively you're getting it from a clone of the same tree, or just like the trees that are almost fused into a mass mind that Joe was talking about. Or, you know, the mycelial networks around other trees. There are trees that are completely different kinds of trees. They're not fused together into a single organism because they're different kinds of trees. But they have the same fungus network along their root systems. So that pine tree over there and that aspen tree over there can still say danger.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they can still like be like, hey, now if you've got seeds and pollen, now's the time to drop them because we're on fire. You know, they can communicate these kind of things. Eventually, of course, we're going to find out everything has some sort of sentience to it and we can't eat anything. It's going to be great. I'm just really looking forward to like, is there anything we can eat, please? The only thing that would be okay at that point is fruit, because the trees want you to eat the fruit. Getting back to it, though, the idea that it might have been in Sholazar or it might have been in Ongoro, it doesn't have to be an or. It can be an and.
Yeah. Well, also go back and look at the current world tree. Go look at I'm going to butcher the name here because my brain doesn't work sometimes. Amiradrasil, I think is the name. Right?
I think it's Amiradrasil.
Yeah. Amiradrasil. So go look at Amiradrasil and look how the roots work with it. Look how that tree is suspended over that island, that landmass that has now been born into the world. It's not underground. It's not one trunk piercing the ground like Teldrassil was. Because Teldrassil was an anomaly when it came to world trees. You go and look at the, why can't I remember the name in Hyjal?
Nordrassil.
Go look at Nordrassil and look how its roots are. Then go look at Amiradrasil and look how its roots are. If these are world trees patterned after the first world tree, after Aluna here, or after the Great Mother tree, then it stands to reason that those roots were probably so much larger and probably suspended the tree much, much higher. And when we're talking about the crater, maybe what we're talking about isn't necessarily that the trunk was pulled from the earth. And Matt brought this up a couple weeks ago, and I think there's more merit to it after looking at the structure of these trees, that it was maybe a portion of root that was yanked from the ground while the tree itself, the main body of it, was suspended above the crust of the earth. Also, if you think about it, that kind of makes sense if they're planting it in order to deal with the Black Empire, which at that point had spread across the surface of Azeroth. You needed to pierce that fleshy exterior carapace, dive down deep, so you don't put the bulk of the tree, the meat of the tree, into the ground. No, you suspend it to let it pierce itself down. So it's entirely possible that multiple locations, it could be more than just Sholazar and Ongoro, that bear their shape from that. For all we know, some of the areas that don't have trees now, that are mostly barren areas but have deep craters, may have been places where roots from the original world tree pierced the surface of the earth. I mean, look at some of the areas where, look at Mulgore. Mulgore is one of those areas where it's essentially a gigantic crater. It's like, it's a bowl. You go all around it, there are gigantic mountains and ranges around it. What if that was just another place where the roots pierced down? We know there's stuff below there. I mean, there's a bunch of other places that could have happened. And so it doesn't necessarily have to be an either or, like Matt's saying. Like, I am agreeing with Matt. It doesn't have to be an either or. It could be both, and it could be more. And in fact, that's probably more likely.
It's even possible to think about, you might be able to plant, like, you might be able to use the locations of other world trees throughout history to triangulate an idea of where the original world tree might have put down roots. Like, right now, we've got Shaldrassil, Nordrassil, Vordrassil, and I can't remember the name of the one that was the unnamed one that might actually have been Luna here. We've got at least four that we know about. And plus, of course, you know, Teldrassil, which was the one that nobody really expected to exist because it wasn't supposed to get planted. But the fact that it became a world tree does make you wonder, what did they plant? You know, when this idea came up, when they decided, you know, oh, we'll make our own world tree, Fandral is the one who put Vordrassil up there. Where was he getting these world tree pieces? Did he have a piece of Aluna here?
Yeah, we don't know. Like, I think part of the assumption was that people have made that he may have pulled it out of the Emerald Dream somehow, but it's never been talked about. It's never been confirmed where he got them from. I guess I don't know. Fascinating and to think about.
Yeah. But to finally come around to attempt to answer your question, I think Joe and I are in agreement that it doesn't have to be or here. It doesn't have to be Un'Goro or Sholazar. Between the fact that both of them were linked, like to the point where the Titan Forged had like temples set up in both and weird pillars with those strange crystals. Like the ones in Sholazar and the ones in Un'Goro are very similar.
Yes.
Like they are exceedingly similar. So it may be something as simple as they needed power and protection to these areas, both of which were very close to Titan facilities. Or it could be that they were literally linked in a way beyond physical, like if they were parts of the world tree.
Mm-hmm.
And the root systems in both of them, there are systems inside both of those places that go deep underground. There's no reason to rule one out at this point.
I would agree. We're going to move on, though, because I think we have time for one more. And this one is from Dr. Quang. I'm putting my own tinfoil hat on here. The talk about ANR's connection to Alun a couple weeks ago made me wonder, are the Titans all necessarily representatives of order? Amon-Thul was supposedly the first Titan and seems to be all about order. But could the other Titans naturally be tied to other forces and were pulled towards order by Amon-Thul as he helped them emerge? Could ANR actually be a nature Titan? And to go really out there, how do we know that Amon-Thul was really first? Maybe he emerged after some of the other Titans and saw whatever the universe was like as chaos. As a master of temporal magic, couldn't he have gone back in time to become the first Titan and be able to influence the emergence of all the others? That is a very good point, and something that I've been... You sent this question, and I've been kind of mulling it around. And for somebody who is such a master of time, why didn't Amon-Thul just go back and do certain things like stop the void entities from piercing the flesh of Azeroth? What prevents him from doing that? Is there a reason why he doesn't or can't? Is it possible that he burned all of that energy making sure that he was the first Titan that was born? And why the dragon aspects that the Bronze Dragonflight in general, when they were trusted with the keeping of the time ways safe, was necessarily maybe because he couldn't anymore or caused too much damage when he did. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's possible that we know that Nosdormu knows the hour of his death, that he'd seen it.
Yeah, we showed it to him.
But even before that, he knew, you know, I will die. You know, he was aware of it and couldn't change it. He was told he couldn't change it. Now we have a different view of that thing. It's quite possible that Amon-Thul knew. I don't know how to put this. I've been thinking about this on a different track for a long time. Think of Amon-Thul not as an entity with control over time, because that's what it looks like to us, but we're not him. Amon-Thul seems to very heavily lean on the concept that there's a true timeline, that there's a way this is supposed to work. And it's quite possible that from Amon-Thul's perspective, he can't change time at all. That if he does go through time and do something, it's because he was supposed to go there and do it. That for him, because keep in mind, time travel, if you look at it from the perspective of I can go around and do whatever I want, is astonishingly chaotic, isn't it? You can literally create alternate timelines.
Well, we just saw that. Warlords of Draenor. What happened when one bronze dragon said, yeah, I'm going to go ahead and do this.
Yeah. Amon-Thul seems to find that anathematical. Like, he does not want to do that. He doesn't. He's very opposed to anything like that. why is it's quite possible that he's more vulnerable to that. Think about it in terms of this. If you are a being who is inherently linked to the flow and nature of time, and somebody travels in time, it's like, for you, it's like a knife.
Mm-hmm.
It's like this horrible thing that is happening where you're aware of the alterations they're trying to make while they're trying to make them. Like, in a way, it's like they're going and carving up on your body. Maybe the reason that Amazul is called the first of the Titans is because he has just from the moment of his existence, he has just existed in all points of time and throughout all of them. That time isn't just something he has power over. It's his nature. It's what he is. He is time.
Yeah, and going back go ahead.
I'm just going to say, so why doesn't he just use his powers to do these things? Because he didn't, and therefore he can't, because he didn't. It isn't, it sounds ridiculous to us, but to him, it's the nature of his existence. Just like, you know, well, why don't you just grow another arm? Because I have an arm, and that's my arm. I can't just grow another one. It's quite possible that every time someone does something to split a time way off, that Amonthul is like diminished because now a piece of him is out over there doing something weird. And that's why he keeps saying this one true timeline. What if the one true timeline is the one that leads to him? Maybe he is the final Titan for all we know. Like, we might be building Amonthul.
Yeah. I mean, it's not completely out of the realm of possibilities.
I don't think that that's what it is. I'm going to straight up say that's just speculation. And I don't think that's what it is.
If they wanted to go that route, they could.
Well, for that matter, it's entirely possible that, well, I'm going to shut up for now and let you go, but I have something else that I will probably throw in at the end.
Okay. Well, the other thing, go back to the first part of the question here, is you talk about all the Titans are necessarily representative of order. We're starting to learn that that's not necessarily the case. And I mean, we had sort of an inkling with Agamar. We had sort of an inkling with Sargeras, because they didn't exactly... they're not perfectly ordered beings. Otherwise, they would have just fallen in line and followed the regimented path that they were supposed to. But we know that they both deviated. Now we know that A&R did as well. They are deviating, so they're not perfectly ordered. Maybe there is something to it.
Plus, I mean, this is something I'm going to throw in here. We haven't really talked about Norgannon yet.
Mm-hmm.
The one who's the discs of Norgannon are named for. We saw that the primordial incarnates did not like arcane magic.
Yes.
And I've been thinking about this since we got back from Shadowlands, and Kalia Menethil ends up finding out that necromancy isn't just powered by what is called death magic.
Mm-hmm.
It's powered by any source of power. It's like, it's magic that affects the dead, but it doesn't have to be powered by just magic from the Shadowlands. You can use life magic to power it. You can use light magic to power it. You can use anything that is a sufficiently powerful source of magic to power it.
Yeah.
And I started thinking about domination magic, which is the magic that we see used in the Shadowlands by the Primus. It's the magic that created the Helm of Domination. It's the magic that Arbiter, Zoval, the original Arbiter, intended to use to reformat our existence.
Mm-hmm.
He was going to use it on all reality. Now, obviously, he was using it with a power source in the Shadowlands. But what is domination if it's not imposing your will on something else, right?
Yep.
What is arcane magic if it's not imposing your will on something else? Why do the Primal Incarnates hate arcane magic so much? Why do they hate mages so much? And they associate mages with the Titans. Even mages who are like, I never really talked to the Titans or anything. They're still like, yeah, no, your magic is the kind of stuff the Titans use. What if order magic is just domination magic, and both of those forms of magic are just imposing your will on the cosmos, which is exactly what arcane magic is? What if arcane magic is just a way of ordering reality? And what is that? The entire thing that the Titans have done and have been doing, they are calling it the ordering of Azeroth, the ordering of the cosmos. That's how they look at it.
Well,
that's their mindset, right?
There's an aspect of that that we, I think, is maybe we need to walk that back a little bit, because I don't know that I necessarily agree that all of them say the ordering of whatever.
No, I'm not saying all of them do. I'm just saying that specifically when we have looked at Titan sources, that's what's presented.
Yes. Right? It's presented in that manner. But
and even the Titans that don't necessarily fall lockstep into all this stuff, like, for instance, A&R still participates in it, whether or not. You know, obviously she thinks highly of Alun, and there's most likely some kind of relationship there. There's still this concept of what if what we're talking about here isn't a kind of magic, it's a mentality of it. It's a way to apply any magical force. You could do this with Fel. You could do this with Arcane. You could do it with anything. It just happens to be Amon-Thul is the one who uses Arcane to do it. Amon-Thul specifically, because he's the one who is the time one, right?
Yeah.
And what group of people on Azeroth are showing more and more access to time magic? Mages, the ones who are using Arcane magic. So I think there's a combination there. And I think that connection has something to do with why Amon-Thul is the way he is.
Yeah. But I was going to go with beyond Amon-Thul, because I think Amon-Thul, there's more to it. And I think when we start getting further into the expansions, we're going to get a little idea. Like there's talk about secret.
I'm sorry. Yeah. But that was what I was trying to get to on Norgannon. Norgannon is the one who taught others to use magic.
Yes.
Not Amon-Thul. Amon-Thul did not.
He's not
the one who taught it. It was Norgannon who left it behind for us to find.
Well, and think about the watchers that are under Norgannon as well. Loka and Mimran. He's the one that bestowed Malagos with his power, etc. But I mean,
and Loken certainly seems to have betrayed Odin, and he did harmful things to the others as well. But Mimran was his best friend, and he murdered him.
Well, there's also a couple things that I want to talk about real quick, because
we are getting away from where your point
is.
And the reason we're getting away from their point is something that I've been thinking for a long time. I'm going to shut up and let you get through your whole point. Let me know when you're done. Okay.
Now, the things that I've been wondering about is as you bring up the fact of if they're all aspects of order, because they all seem to embody something different. And I don't know that that's necessarily a conscious choice. The things that we know about Titan souls, and which is very limited, because it is extremely limited, because we only have a handful of sources, is that it's essentially this nugget of energy that comes into our cosmos and a world forms around it to keep it safe, almost like an egg. And I'm paraphrasing, but for what is written in the books and what we've been given, that's essentially the short version of it. But we don't know where those souls, those energies come from. I posited this a while ago, and I don't know if this is any sort of truth to it, but if the old gods can hurl pieces of themselves into our reality and it can take on a life of its own, why can't aspects from other realities or other bases of power? Now, A&R is a really good example. Protector of life, nature, health. She's the one that is most aligned with Alun, but we know there's an entire realm of life. What if A&R is the result of that realm trying to push into or throw a piece of itself into ours? Amon-Thul is time. That's a completely separate thing. Maybe that is a construct that exists outside of ours. But then you have Norgannon, and we know that there is an elemental plane of order. What if he's the one from there? We have, or the facility therein. I don't want to say just elemental plane, but the facility of order, the sphere of order. Norgannon from the sphere of Arcane. You have Golgoneth, who sphere of water. We know that fire is one of the primal elements. We have Khazgroth, speaking of fire, and earth, seems to align well with both of those. What if these are all aspects that were sort of donated to whatever the great project was of the first ones, and this was the intended result? What if they are not all creatures necessarily of order, but when they wake up and the first person they see is Amon-Thul, who puts them on a path, they just kind of go along with it because here's this other being of the same power as me who emanates a sympathetic energy, something that I can feel, something that I see as kinship, is welcoming me and basically shepherding me from my cold void egg into a greater purpose and is showing me what we need to do. And so I'm going to go and help. but they don't necessarily all have to be slaves to order. They can all potentially have origins elsewhere. There's enough planes of existence that that could have happened. Like, I'm just throwing it out there. There's enough possibility that they could have their roots elsewhere, not just order. That was the point I was trying to make, Matt.
Mm-hmm. Now, I want you to think again about Norgannon for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Norgannon, who, as you pointed out, was the empowerer of both Mimiron and Loken.
Mm-hmm.
Norgannon, who left behind who's the discs of Norgannon are created for and named after, which is basically, for lack of a better word, the developer log.
Yeah, the distillation of knowledge. Yeah.
Yeah, this is where they put the notes. Norgannon, whose gift is arcane magic.
Mm-hmm.
What if it's not Amonthul who is the arbiter, who's the bringer of order?
What if it's Norgannon? Yep.
No, and what if it's not order, but domination?
Mm-hmm.
Because you order things by dominating them. Order is a form of domination. It's literally one of the words for dominating something is order. I order you to do this. What if that's the order? It's not an order. We're not ordering. I'm ordering you. It's the ordering of Azeroth. It's not the we made it orderly, but the I'm giving you an order.
And it would stand to reason that there's something to that, which is why Fel, which is constantly shown as the essential distillation of disorder, doesn't kill a Titan.
No, it just makes them that.
Different.
What happens when you break out of someone else's worldview? What happens when you break out of someone else's idea of how things should work? Often they swing way over that way.
Like, yeah, we talk about the pendulum effect.
We're talking about childhood rebellion.
Yeah.
When you're like, think about your own teen years, when you are trying to establish who you are. Now, it's not fair to say that any of the Titans are the parents to the other Titans, but if Amonthul's the first one to come around, each time he comes to one, he is their first example of what they are. So he is what they're going to model themselves after, but he is also what they're going to rebel against. By necessity, we call Sargeras the rebel Titan, but they could all be rebel Titans. I mean, Aenar is very clearly not in line with what Amonthul said to her. And if that's the case, if Aenar can be in some kind of quiet but open rebellion against Amonthul, where she doesn't go along with everything he says and is aware that he can't really force her, who's to say that the others aren't? You know, especially after what they've been through. Amonthul is very clearly not always right.
We have seen that, yeah.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Yes, multiple times now. And if you look at, again, going back to Norgannon, you look at the ones that followed him, there's kind of a weird sort of fratricidal relation between them. Like, Loken killed Mimiron. Mimiron might not even be his real name. He might have been named just Mimir. You know, Mimiron might be what they've called him when they put him in the robot body.
He could have been Mimir, yeah.
Yeah.
Which would make sense.
And thinking about that, then you have like Thorim, who Loken betrayed and murdered his wife. You know, it feels like all this time we've thought of Sargeras as the one who is the enemy to the Pantheon. But when we finally found what Sargeras was doing, was he trying to destroy the Pantheon? Did he hate the Pantheon?
No, he was trying to free them and, well, I'm air quoting free, but bring them to his side. He wanted his family.
Yeah, he wanted them to be with him again. And we know that Loken loved to set up people so that they opposed people that they once loved. He did that with Helya. Mm-hmm. He did that with Helya. He came to Helya and basically turned her against her father. Now, she had good reason for that. You know, it's not like, you know, he hadn't done plenty to deserve it. But who was Odin's maker? Amanthul. And who was the other person who was empowered by Amanthul? Rhaadan. And Rhaadan's own children ripped his heart out. Like, you look at these patterns among the Titans and the Titanforged, and I really start to think about, in order to save the Titans, Norgannon bound their essences together and shot them across space to Azeroth, right? He fired them at Azeroth, and they hit the bodies of the people they'd empowered and tried to inhabit them. But of course, those bodies were too small and they couldn't last. We know for a fact that Rhaadan took the Amanthul essence out of himself.
Yeah, and buried,
put it somewhere.
Buried it, or quote unquote, got rid of it.
Not got rid of it. We know exactly where he put it. The waters of the Vale of Eternal Blossoms.
Yeah, that was the water source. The genesis of that. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is very similar to the water that flows out of the Well of Eternity, which is imbued with the power of Azeroth, right? Not the same, but very similar.
Patterns.
I think, pattern. I think all of this is bound up in what we're talking about. I think that Norgannon is the Order One. I think that, well, specifically the Arcane One, that the idea of arcane magic is like inherent domination. It is on the micro scale, when a human is using it, or an elf or whatever, they're using it to put their will over reality, mm-hmm. to dominate it. And that's exactly what was done to the Primal Incarnates and to their children and to the Drakes, is they had the Titans' vision for the future put over them. It's what they were rebelling against, because they didn't want the Titans telling them how they should be. They wanted to discover what they could be on their own. And that's an inherent process of every child dealing with its progenitors. And that might very well be the process every Titan is on. And it may be the process that Azeroth is on. And we go back to, why doesn't Amanthul use his time powers? Because it's possible Amanthul is fully aware of all of this.
Yeah.
That at the moment of his creation, he may have become aware of everything that was going to happen and how he couldn't do anything to stop it. And that's why he put Nosdormu in the position he was, because only way you can responsibly be in charge of, steward of that kind of power is if you know the weight of it and the weight that he, as Amanthul, might have to live with. That, yeah, I'm going to do that and it's not going to work. And I'm going to do that in a fit of pique and it's not going to work. And I'm going to do this and I'm going to end up practically almost dead. And I'm going to end up trapped. And then maybe whatever comes after that, that's going to happen to me too. And I have to make sure that it does, because the first ones created existence with this in mind. And the Amanthul might be the first one's equivalent of, you know, a documentation. You know, the notes, that might be what Amanthul is, more so than he's orderly. And that's just kind of blowing my head up. You know what I mean?
There's a distinct possibility. Regardless, we know that we're going to be finding out more about that in the future as we move through the next series and set of expansions, because, well, they've basically told us as such.
And we know that the next one is going to be just the start. So.
Yes, the very, very start of it. But I think that's going to do it for today, folks. Blizzard Watch.
Thank you. You really do need to stop me.
Yes. we'd keep going for several hours, but I'm sure nobody would complain about. Blizzard Watch is made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/blizzardwatch. Your continued support means that this podcast site and community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, better chance at having your question answered on our podcast or the Q&A ads for your site experience. Again, if you have questions for this or any of our podcasts, be sure to send those in to podcast@blizzardwatch.com. Specify the show and any special pronunciation of your name. You can also hit us on Discord, where we have the Q&A podcast questions channel. And then if you are a Patreon supporter, as a way of saying thank you, we have the Patreon Q&A podcast question channel set aside for you, so you can ask your questions there, and we will give you first billing. Friends, thank you so much. We'll see you next week.